We've been in a series called The Hall of Fame at the Gathering Church, and we've been having a great time talking about some of the heroes of the faith. And letting what God did in them encourage us that we might learn what is possible for God to do in us by studying these faith hall of famers. Our faith is built. There's a passage in the book of Hebrews chapter 11, where the writer of Hebrews celebrates the faith of these giants in the faith and reminds us that our God uses people by faith. And so we've been studying some of the people from that Hebrews chapter 11. And today, I want to tell the story of my all-time favorite faith Hall of Famer. He is the Hall of Famer. He wrote the first 5 books of the Bible. He was instrumental in God's plan to save the world. He is the great deliverer of Israel, the one who delivered the law to humanity, the very person under whose leadership the descendants of Abraham became a people, the greatest of all time. Today, we're talking about Moses. That was my WWE Hall of Fame introduction for Moses. It's what I picture whenever I think about him and whenever I think about this series. Moses' whole life was epic. Everything that happened in his life was remarkable. I've studied his life more than Jesus would be the only life that I've studied more than Moses. I love him. I love what God did in him. I love who he is. I love to understand him. I love to see the miracles that God did in him, around him, and through him. And what an epic life. Moses lived to be 120 years old. His life was extended by God so that he could keep in his calling. Keep going in his calling, and his life was filled with epic moments all along the way. I don't have time to tell his whole story. In fact, the greatest movie of all time, Academy Award-winning film for Best Animated Feature, The Prince of Egypt, if you haven't seen it, you just don't know. The Prince of Egypt takes 2 hours to just tell the story going up to the Red Sea. Okay, I've got 35 minutes, give or take, and I couldn't do the whole story for you today. So what I would recommend is after church today, after you go to step one, no matter how beautiful it is outside, I want you to go inside your house and rent and watch The Prince of Egypt. Okay, that's your homework for today. And be blown away by it. And what I want you to do after that is download the soundtrack to your Spotify and bop to it all week long. I'm going to give you my favorite moments from the life of Moses. And not just my favorite moments from the life of Moses, but the moments that I believe are instrumental to my faith. These have been the moments that have built who I am as a Christian and as a follower of Jesus and as one who pursues God. And so I'll tell you a little bit about Moses' life today. Moses spent the first 40 years of his life in Egypt. He was found in a basket floating down the river by Pharaoh's daughter, and she adopted him, and he was raised in the house of the Pharaoh. Unlike the movie, The Prince of Egypt, it only gets one or two things wrong, but unlike that movie, Moses probably knew who he was and even knew who his family was as he was being raised in the palace. His own mother was his wet nurse. She nursed him until he was weaned. You can read all about this in the beginning of the book of Exodus, but as Moses is growing up, he's got some kind of awareness of who he is, but it isn't until he's 40 years old, when he's 40 years old and has spent his whole life serving the Pharaoh, and in Pharaoh's house, he's 40 years old. It says that he decided one day to take a walk to go see the burdens of his people. He went and walked amongst the slaves of Israel to see what the people of God were doing out there. And that's when he saw a guard beating a Hebrew slave, and he stepped in to stop him. In the struggle, he killed the guard, was branded a murderer in Egypt, and he fled across the desert and moved into Midian, into the people, the nomadic tribe of Midian. These are the same Midianites that would become trouble for the Israelites and even Gideon, who we talked about in the first week of this series, hundreds of years later. At this time, they're living in the southern Arabian desert as a nomadic people group. Moses lived as a Midianite for 40 years. 40 years. He's 40 years old when he goes out into the wilderness. He's 40 years as a Midianite. He gets married. He marries the daughter of the leader of the Midianites. He has sons, two sons, maybe some other children. We just know about the two. His life moved on from Egypt. He built a peaceful life for himself out there in the wilderness until one day. Moses was 80 years old. And people aged the same way they age now. The lifespan of people was similar to what it is now. Moses was 80 years old. I love to point to this story whenever I'm talking to some of our people who are maybe in those later years of life and think God is all done with them and it's time to just sit in a rocking chair and wait. Can I tell you that God's not done with you until he's done with you? That there is still more for you to give. You've got more to offer. There is more calling and more on your life. And so Moses is 80 years old, and he's out tending a herd. He's tending his father-in-law's flock when something catches his eye. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. In other words, what the heck is going on over there? And when the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am, bush. And then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I've also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. So come, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, but I will be with you. And this will be a sign for you that I've sent you. When you've brought the people out of Egypt, you will serve God on this mountain. Just take a moment and picture this scene. I mean, this man has lived a full life. He's 80 years old. For 40 years, he lived in the palace of Pharaoh. He was somebody. He did something. He was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter. He would have known the people, the culture, their ways. And yet, he never would have felt like he really fit in. And then he spent 40 years as a shepherd, as a nomad, raising a family. He fell in love. He had a peaceful life of herding some goats around or sheep or whatever it might have been. And now suddenly God was telling him there was more? That he wanted him not just to do more, but to go back to the Egyptians? God spoke to him and told him that he had heard the cries of his people and that he was sending Moses to deliver them. And Moses says, me? Why me? I'm the worst possible candidate. I'm literally wanted for murder there. I can't go to Egypt. I never even really knew my people. Why me? I don't even know you. I don't know you as my God. So God tells Moses who he is. And then Moses answers, but behold, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to listen to my voice. They'll just say the Lord did not appear to you. And the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? And he said, it's a staff. It's obviously a staff. And then he said, throw it on the ground. And he threw it on the ground, and it turned into a snake, and Moses ran away from it. I think that's hilarious. Moses, this 80-year-old man, he's got a walking stick because he's in the mountains trying to walk. And he says, God, they're never going to believe that you sent me. And God said, what are you holding? He was like, my staff. He said, throw it down. He throws it down. Snake. There's a snake. They'll believe you because of the signs and wonders that I can do through you, Moses. They'll believe you because they'll believe me. Okay. You'll make them believe me. But I'm telling you, you got the wrong guy. Moses says to the Lord, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither in the past or since you've spoken to me just now. I am slow of speech and tongue. And the Lord said to him, who has made the man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go. I will be your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. And he says, oh, Lord, please send somebody else. Send anybody, literally anyone, would be a better option. Moses argues with God. But even when God's will, because when God's will for our life is obvious and clear to us, it is still very hard. And it requires faith. And faith is very hard. It was hard for Moses, and he begged to not have to do it. And God then said, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. And behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. And you'll speak to him and put the words in his mouth. And I will be your mouth and with his mouth and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people and be your mouth, and you'll be his God to him. And take in your hand this staff with which you shall do the signs. Moses was terrified at this calling. But God says, you don't have to do it alone. I'll be with you. And I'm going to put exactly the right people around you to help you. So Moses goes. And he tells Pharaoh, let my people go. And God sends 10 plagues to force their hand. And finally, the Pharaoh releases the people. And over 1 million people follow Moses out of Egypt into the Red Sea. And when they get to the sea, the people are terrified and angry. There's 1 million of them, and they've got the sea in front of them. And Pharaoh has changed his mind, and now the Egyptian army is pursuing them. And they see the sea, and they see the army, and they say, why did you bring us out of Egypt? Did you bring us here to die? What are you doing, Moses? And Moses says, what are we doing, God? And God says, Moses, take the staff in your hand and walk out into the sea and raise your hand and raise the staff. And Moses does it, and God parts the Red Sea, and all of the people cross on dry ground because God provides a way when there is no way. If he's called you to it, you can guarantee he will make a way through it. The Egyptians follow into this dry ground in the sea thinking, this is great. We'll chase them right through. And as soon as the Israelites get out and all of the Egyptians are in, God closes the sea on them. They now have no more pursuers. And the people are led into southern Arabia, near where Moses was living before, to a mountain called the Mountain of God, Mount Sinai. And on their way, a lot of stuff happens. God begins to feed the people bread from heaven. They wake up every morning to fresh sourdough all around their tents. But it's not enough, because God would never call his people to be vegetarians. They demanded meat, and so he sent them meat, quails every day. Moses started leading the people, but there was way too many of them, and he was stressed out all day, every day. All he did was hear the problems of the people and try to make judgments for them. And one day he's standing there. He's down in this area where the Midianites are living. And so his father-in-law, Jethro, is standing there with him. Now, Jethro has been leading this large people group, the Midianites, for many years. He's experienced. And he's watching what Moses does. And it says, when Moses' father-in-law saw what he was doing for the people, he said, what is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God when they have a problem. They come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you're doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You're not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice, I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. And moreover, look for able men from the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, hundreds, fifties, of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they'll bring to you, but any small matter they'll decide for themselves. And so it will be easier for you. And then they will help bear the burden with you. And if you do this, God will direct you, and you'll be able to endure. And all these people will go to their place in peace. And Jethro drops this bomb, and then he just leaves, and he's gone. You're on your own, Moses. Jethro reminds Moses that he can't do everything alone, and then he goes home. Moses leads the people onto the mountain of God, and this is where one of the most important moments in the history of God and humanity takes place. Mount Sinai, the mountain of God. Moses goes up on the mountain to meet with God. This is the moment when God's people really become a people. When he organizes them, he gives them the law, a way to be near to him. For hundreds of years, they've had no way to approach the presence of God because of their sin. They knew of him, they could not know him. The law gets a bad rap. We're excited that the law is completed in Jesus, and we want to do away with anything to do with the law. We think the law is bad. We think the law is constraining and confining, but the law is freedom. The law is what allows us to understand the holiness of God, and it gives us a pathway to try and approach him, to get closer to him. The law came into existence because our God doesn't want to be a distant God. He wants to be with his people. And so Moses receives the law, and it's this powerful, amazing, beautiful moment. The God of the universe reaching down to his people to be known by them. Moses is on this mountain in the presence of God for 40 days. And God gives him stone tablets with the Ten Commandments written on them by God's own hand. God was up there in the literal presence of God, speaking with God, receiving these commandments from God. And then he goes down the mountain. And I just imagine, like, he's bopping. Like, he's feeling... This 80-year-old man has got some pep in his step. He's got these big tablets, but God wrote these with his own hand. You can't wait to show everybody. He's excited. I can't wait to show everybody. They're all going to be so happy. Everybody's going to be so filled with the Spirit. They're going to be so excited to hear from God. And Moses is on cloud 9. He's as spiritual as he's ever been. And he gets to the bottom of the mountain. And what does he see? He gets to the bottom of the mountain. And the second that he gets there, he realizes that in the on the mountain there was peace, but in the valley there is chaos. The people are worshiping a false idol. He can't believe it. He's been in the literal presence of God. And now, what is happening in the valley? I wonder if you've ever been in a moment where it felt like you'd encountered God. Maybe you went to a conference, or you were at a student summer camp, or it was a special church service. It was 21 days of prayer. It was a powerful moment of worship, and it felt more than natural. And everything felt at peace, and everything felt right, and you encountered God. But then the moment that you left that place, reality hit you like a sledgehammer. You got baptized, and a week later, your marriage hits the rocks. You have a moment of worship that's unlike anything you've ever experienced, and then you get that phone call from the doctor on Monday. Maybe you know what it feels like to have this incredible moment where it feels like you finally got it figured out, like you're on the right spiritual track, and then, holy smokes, in the valley, there is chaos. I just encountered God. Why is my life suddenly falling apart? That's the moment that Moses has. He comes down the mountain only to find that while he was away receiving the law from God, Aaron was making an idol for the people to worship, a golden calf. Moses lost all of his holiness immediately. This to me is a super relatable moment as a father. You know, that moment where you're like, you're just feeling so holy. You had an incredible prayer time and you're carrying the tablets out to your children. You're like, they're just going to be so happy. They're going to honor me and I'm going to honor them and we're going to worship God together. And within seconds, you're smashing the tablets on the ground. You know, that's what Moses does. He loses all of his holiness. He smashes the tablets. He goes, are you kidding me? I've been with God and you're doing what? What's happening down here? Aaron, what the heck? Moses was hurt and he felt betrayed and he said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you brought such great sin upon them? And Aaron said, well, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. Don't be mad, bro. Don't be mad. You know the people. They're set on evil. Can't take them away from it. They love it. And they said to me, make us gods who will go before us. As for Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't even know what became of him. It's been like a month plus 10 days. So I said to them, let anyone who has gold take it off. That's all I said, I promise. And they gave it to me. And I just threw it into the fire and out came this calf. I don't know. It's crazy, right? Isn't that crazy, Moses? I barely did anything. Just threw it in the fire. Calf came right out. Maybe it is a god. I don't know. Weird, right? It was a mess. And Moses was betrayed by the very person that was sent to help him. I know that had to hurt. And so God judges their sin. And Moses goes to make atonement for the people. And God is good and God is gracious. And Moses and God are talking about it. And God tells Moses, go to the promised land and I'll clear the way for you. And I'll give you the land. But these people are rebellious. So you go to the promised land. I promised it to you. You can have it. I will make it empty. You'll just move in. But I'm not going to go with you. And Moses says, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If your presence will not go with me, do not bring us up from here. I would rather dwell in your presence in the desert than enter into paradise without it. God is pleased with that response. He says, okay, Moses, I'll go with you, but just know that as I go with you, it will not be easy. So God gives Moses more tablets, and Moses holds his cool. He doesn't smash them this time. And he decides the problem that they were facing in the valley was that the presence of God was all the way up on the mountain. He needed it to be closer. Now Moses used to take this tent and pitch it outside the camp, far off from the camp, and he called it the tent of meeting. And everyone who sought the Lord would go to the tent of meeting, which was outside the camp. And whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people would rise up, and each would stand at his tent door and watch Moses until he had gone into the tent. And when Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent. And the Lord would speak with Moses. And when all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would rise up and worship, each at his tent door. And thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. And when Moses turned again into the camp, his assistant Joshua, son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. Keeping the presence of God close helped Moses make sure that those holy mountaintop moments didn't disappear in the valley. If you want to make sure that you can stay near to the presence of God, don't only meet his presence up on the mountain. You need a tent of meeting down in the valley. You can't just go and visit him once a week, once a quarter, once a year. If you want to be in the presence of God, then get in the presence of God day to day, and you will find all the difference that it makes. One of the things that I love about this the most is Joshua. Joshua, I love him in this story. We're going to do a series on Joshua later this year I'm excited about. Joshua is a young man at this moment, maybe in his late teenage years. And Joshua's been assigned to be servant of Moses. And if you don't know, when Moses will die at the end of his story, Joshua is the next leader of the people of Israel. His faith carries him over into the promised land. And I love this little moment right here where it just says that even after Moses had left, Joshua would just stand at the door just to get near to the presence of God. If you want to be used by God, have faith like that. So Moses and Aaron, they lead the people through a lot. God takes them to the promised land, but the people were afraid. They sent in 12 spies, and 10 of them said, if we try to take this land, we will die. They lacked faith. God brought them all the way this far, and when they got to the gate of the promise he had for them, their faith failed them. So God sent them back into the wilderness for 40 more years. Can you imagine? The promise that God had for them, a generations old promise, was right there, but it was their lack of faith that caused them to miss out on it. I wonder what blessings, promises, miracles we miss out on because of our lack of faith. Almost everyone who left Egypt died out in the wilderness because of their lack of faith. But their children entered the promised land. I pray that if I miss out on the blessings that God has for me because of my lack of faith, that God would increase the faith of my children, that they could step into the blessings that I could not. Moses leads the people as best he can. It's not easy. People are so stubborn, difficult, rebellious. And there's a moment where they rebel against him and the priests, and God sends a plague to them, and he's threatening to wipe them all out. He says, Moses, I'm taking them all out. I'm going to start over with you. And Moses says, please, God, no. And Moses and Aaron run out into the people as this plague spreads. And in the book of Numbers, it says, they stood between the living and the dead and interceded for them, and God relented. And when I pray often, I ask God to give me that kind of courage to stand in between the living and the dead as an intercessor in my city. After 40 years, they get to the border of the promised land again. And now Moses is 120 years old. He's old. He's tired. In Numbers chapter 20, we learn that there was a moment where he disobeyed God directly. His wife had just died. He's mourning. And the people have been very stubborn and difficult. And Moses is tired. And the people were complaining again about not having water. And so God told him to gather the people and just tell a rock to produce water, and it would. And then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. God gave Moses these specific instructions that were designed to build the faith of the people, and Moses disobeyed. He hit the rock. So God told him he would not get to enter the promised land. Can you imagine all that he's done and been through? And sure enough, because God is gracious and kind, he allows Moses to climb Mount Pisgah, overlooking the promised land, and he sees it, and then he dies. And it's Joshua that leads the people in. And there are so many reasons for this. It's easy for us to sit here as our armchair quarterbacks and say, why would God do that? That's so mean. Moses worked so hard. He led for so long. He didn't get to go into the promised land. The man's 120 years old. He's tired. Let him be tired. He's a little grouchy. He's just lost his wife. He's expressed that he wants to be with her. He doesn't want to keep doing this. And God is holy. God's holiness is not to be ignored. When God gives us a command, we're to follow it. And as leaders of people, the standards are higher. I'll get that in a second. For the people who speak for him are held to higher standards. And the New Testament reminds us that those who speak for God are judged more harshly. It is what it is. But despite this, Moses' life was a life well lived. He served God. He cared for his people. He had faith even when it felt impossible. And his story builds our faith. So three quick things to take away from the life of Moses. Number one, if God calls you, he will carry you. If God calls you, Moses' reaction when he's called is one of my favorite moments in the Bible. It's not dissimilar from Gideon's. When Gideon is called by God, the angel of the Lord says, mighty warrior, and he says, pardon me, my Lord, are you sure you got the right guy? I'm the least of my family. We're the smallest tribe in Israel. You really should ask someone else. Moses kind of says the same thing. God, you must have made a mistake here. I'm not the right person for this. No, nobody's going to want to follow me. I don't have a people. I've never had a people. I didn't fit in Egypt. I didn't belong there. I was other. I was something different. I had a home and I had responsibilities, but I was Hebrew. I was the people we enslaved. And then how am I supposed to fit in with my people? I was one of their slavers. I was one of their captors. I never even knew you, God. I'm not a good follower. I'm not a good believer. I've never made a sacrifice. I've never been to a temple. I don't even know how to pray. I don't even know your name. Why would you call me? Why would you want to? I can't even talk right. He's unqualified. He's got a past. His relationship with God isn't good enough. Nobody's going to believe him. Nobody's going to follow him. He names all of his physical limitations. And maybe you've got 100 reasons why God can't and won't and shouldn't use you. Maybe they're similar. I don't know you very well, God. I just started this whole thing. I can't be used by you. I've got a past. I've got a history, God. Don't you know about my mistakes? Don't you know about my sins? Don't you know about all the reasons you should never forgive me? Because I won't forgive myself. Maybe you've got good reasons why God shouldn't use you. I could think of 100 real reasons why God shouldn't use me. I remember when Rael and I felt called to plant this church. I had an argument just like this with God. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I liked my job. I liked what I was doing. I didn't want all this. I said, God, you got the wrong guy. I'm not qualified. I'm not good at any of the things that I'd have to be good at to do that. I've got a past. I've got so many mistakes. I'm a troublemaker. I've never not been in trouble. I'm in trouble literally all the time. You don't want to use me? There's somebody better. And I love what God says to Moses. Who is it that made man's mouth that he could speak? Don't tell me what your limitations are, Moses. I made you. And I felt the same thing in my heart, John Mark. I know what your limitations are. I gave them to you. I know what you can do and what you can't do. I know what your experiences are because I was with you. I know about your pain. I know about your suffering. I know about the things that you've done wrong because I've forgiven them. I know who you are. And yet I'm calling you. God will call you not based on your attributes, not based on your accolades, but based on your faith. He loves to use people that are hard to use, unlikely to be used. He loves to use people that don't want to be used if they have big enough faith to say yes. That's who God is. He's not looking for your perfection. He's looking for your yes. I love what he says to the Apostle Paul when Paul says, God, I've got these things in me that we got to get rid of if you want to use me. Help me. And God says to him, my grace is sufficient for you. And my power is made perfect in your weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses that Christ's power may rest on me. Moses didn't have it all together. God knew who he was and he knew what he'd done and he chose him anyways. Maybe you don't have it all together. Maybe you've got a history. Maybe you've got weaknesses. But Jesus paid your debt on the cross, all of it. Your sins are forgiven completely, everyone. Wiped away, washed whiter than snow. the Holy Spirit will give you the power to do the work he's called you to do. In fact, we're told that every wonder and sign that Jesus performs, the same Spirit that was at work in him is at work in us. He knows what's in you because he made you. Have faith. Go when and where you're called. Second thing is this. Keep his presence close. Oh, this is huge. Moses came off this mountaintop moment with God and everything just fell apart. He was just up there in God's presence, worshiping and whole. And the moment he came down the mountain, it was chaos and pain and frustration. So what was his solution? Moses took a tent and pitched it outside the camp, far off from the camp, and he called it the tent of meeting. And when Moses entered the tent, a pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moses. Moses was in God's presence on the mountain, but he was in chaos in the valley. So his solution was to bring God's presence to the valley. You're going to have mountaintop moments. I pray that you do. There will be times where you feel so close to God, you can almost touch his robe. And every time you experience that, there will be a valley of chaos waiting for you on the other side. So keep his presence close. Set up your tent of meeting. It's just not enough for you to only get near to him here. You need to get near to him tomorrow as well. Tuesday, Wednesday, every day, you need to step into the presence of God. Experiencing God right here is powerful, but it just can't be the only place you experience him. I've got a tent of meeting. It's not enough for me to just worship here. I have a tent of meeting. It's my closet. We live in a house from the 90s. It's got that great 90s master bedroom suite where you go through the bathroom into the closet on the other side of the bathroom. What that means specifically is that there are two doors between me and my children when I'm in the tent of meeting. Two of them. And they open both. But still, I get in there early. It's the first thing that I do. I just go meet with him. Just go pray. Sometimes just for a minute. Just to make sure that where I begin my day is in his presence. I know that the second I walk out those doors, there will be chaos in the valley. I know it. I've seen it. I've lived it. Y'all, I got three small children, okay? There is chaos in the valley. But there is peace in the tent. So get in the tent of meeting. Get in his presence. Make your car your tent of meeting. Make your living room chair your tent of meeting. Make your office desk your tent of meeting. Everywhere that you go, may you bring his presence with you. And here's what I pray. It's known that that's where I'm praying in the morning, that I go in there and that's what I do. And oh my goodness, my prayer is that just like Joshua, he just wanted to stand outside the door because he knew Moses met with God in there. Oh, I pray that that's what my children feel. That my children would know that there is peace in our valley when our Father has been in the tent of meeting. Last thing is this. Don't go alone. Don't go alone. This is a recurring lesson in Moses' life. When he goes to Pharaoh, God sends him Aaron. As he's telling God about all the ways that he can't do it, God says, your brother is already on the way to meet you. I already knew who you needed, Moses, and he's on his way. When he's leading the people, Jethro tells him, let somebody help you. Can't do it alone. Later, God tells him, choose 72 leaders to lead the people. When he goes up to the mountain in the presence of God, Joshua goes with him. Wherever you go, don't go alone. God's made us to fulfill our purpose in the context of community. You need people around you. You need people to help you. You need people to carry the weight with you. You need people to encourage you, to hold you accountable, to fight beside you, to celebrate with you. If Moses couldn't do it alone, why would you think that you can? Find community. Find it here. You can find that kind of community right here on a Sunday morning on the Dream Team in the lobby, on First Wednesdays as we hang out. You can find that sort of community in a small group around people. You can find that sort of community in a million different places. Find it and don't do it alone. I love the life of Moses and all the things that it teaches us. But most importantly, that it's never too late for God to do something powerful in your life because of the faith that you showed up with. If you're in here today and you're ready to enter into a relationship with Jesus, maybe you've always thought, how could he use me? It's too late for me. I've made too many mistakes. I've gone too far. I've done too many things wrong. I've made too many mistakes. May you be reminded by the life of his servant Moses that it's not too late. Every head bowed, every eye closed, pray this prayer with me. Heavenly Father, forgive me for my sin. Forgive me for all the ways that I made it about me. I believe in you. I believe in your death and resurrection. I believe that you are who you say you are. And so all that I am from this day on, I will follow you. In Jesus' name, amen.